Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's a minute past the hour as we begin this Thorn in the Side Thursday of the 20th day of February 2014. Welcome to the little conversation. Thank you, Randy. Randy noting loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. Very good, very good. Of course, there's a brand new Listen Live button over at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Try it out if you'd like. It works real good. Yes, indeed. Also, hop on over into the chat room and join in the conversation. Folks wandering in now. Sparky's there, so's Kathy, Jeremy, Jan, and Blue Ape. Good evening, y'all. And, of course, also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the ever-present traditional mail address and PayPal button, which is the means by which we keep this whole thing going. I had a note from Robert in Australia earlier in which he noted, he said, it's time for my regular 20th of the month up over down under challenge. I'm putting $50 on the table. I'd like someone to match that. Then I'd like someone else to match that match. And then a further someone to match that. Robert says, let's build a little rainy day fund or a replace the aging equipment fund. And I must agree wholeheartedly with Robert that it is better to be out of a hole than in one. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So the challenge is on the table. Robert will match the first $50 that comes in. And because of the way things worked out last night, I should note that the evening's usual $150 fundraising goal is actually only $130 this evening because we got a little bit ahead last night. So that makes things perhaps a little bit simpler. Been in a frenzy of bill paying lately. And, some come to its first of the month, some come at the middle of the month, some come at the end of the month. And, they get there. It's all about the hat, you know. Everybody goes in the hat, and then because this is not commercial radio. This is not radio that can, that has a NASA foam mattress, Swedish bowling ball, vacuum cleaner, Bose Wave radio to sell you. No, we're not selling anything here. We don't sell a blessed thing. What we do, however, is try to create a community, and that's not the royal we, that's the all of us working together we. We make a little community whereby we can attempt to understand the world in which we live and maybe even come up with the occasional solution. That is the nature of conversation radio and this community. So, yeah, Thorn in the Side Thursday with the 20th of the month up over down under challenge on the board. And I know it must get a little frustrating that it seems that we have been unable to really, really give attention
to things that have badly needed attention. Because of the ongoing disaster unfolding here in West Virginia, which kind of captures my attention. And we've got another one, I'm sorry to say. After the close of the program last night, I went wandering off in search of things that I may have missed during the program. There it was, another excellent piece of writing by Ken Ward Jr., and what do we have to do to get this guy a Pulitzer, please? Headline, DEP working another coal industry spill in McDowell County, parenthetically, West Virginia. Yeah, I guess these things come in threes, too. But no, it's true. And this one has to do with a sludge slurry impoundment. The outfit at the toxic waste impoundment, it's the Antaeus Gary impoundment site. Yeah, and it kind of goes to show you the nature of extreme energy extraction, because this is not like a new mine. And we had a lot of rain yesterday. I may have mentioned that. And we've had a lot of snow melt in the last two or three days. Hey, we got up to 70 degrees here today. And apparently the rain and the snow melt caused these toxic waste impoundments to be compromised, insofar as the water filled up into the toxic waste impoundment and caused it to overflow into a nearby creek. See, if you were to ask, for instance, Arley J. Blasting Dust of the coal industry, he might tell you, "Well, see, this is what happens when we don't bury the damn streams. You can get stuff in them. Act of God." Mind you, act of God. Oh, brother. It turns out that as of May 2002, there was a major accident at this impoundment, and it was abandoned. And the impoundment was reclaimed by the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting. Which means that it was reclaimed by the people of the state of West Virginia who pay taxes. It was not reclaimed by the coal company that made the damnable mess in the first place. DEP officials said runoff from melting snow overran the site's sediment control ponds, sending black water, which is not water but is toxic waste, running into an adjacent creek. Oh, for pity's sakes! This was reclaimed. Why has it still got filth in it? Oh, wait! The former slurry impoundment was reopened by a company that is re-mining the site for what Ken Ward Jr. refers to as leftover bits of coal. Welcome to the world of extreme energy extraction. They mined it. They mined it out. Now they have come back to get it to get the leavings. Because profit. Yeah. A religious fella might note that having three toxic chemical events in 2 months might be something, because, you know, the religious people are forever saying that, you know, hurricanes strike places because of homosexual, secular, humanist, liberal, evolutionary Satanists. Well, two can play at that game. I would suggest that maybe three of these in such a short span of time might be indicative of the fact that if there was a great big bearded delinquent juvenile delinquent in the sky, that maybe it's a mess. Pay attention. Or maybe there need be no divine intervention whatsoever, and this is just the natural outgrowth of giving industry free rein in this state for the last 100+ years. Now, if you go to WVGazette.com and read this story, you have to go to page 2 for the real good stuff. In the McDowell County incident, by the way, McDowell County, one of the poorest counties in the state, and yet has produced more coal than many, many coal-producing counties in Appalachia and elsewhere. Billions of dollars have flowed out of holes in the ground and blasted mountaintops in McDowell County, and the poverty there is crushing. So that's what we mean when we say McDowell County. In the McDowell County incident, there is a local water system located just downstream from the site, but it does not get its water supply from the creek that's being polluted by the black water, i.e. toxic waste, spill. And it's all, this article is all about DEP officials, DEP officials, DEP officials. The coal company that did all the polluting, not to be found, apparently. Lord God. But DEP officials were there to do their job, i.e. to provide convenient excuses for the toxic coal company. DEP officials blamed the new spill on heavy snowmelt in the area. But agency records, Ken Ward reports, show the operation was cited last month and again on February 7th for runoff-related violations. Yeah. On January 17th, DEP inspectors cited several areas of erosion at the site that were, quote, contributing to additional coal fines going into the ponds in Grapevine Branch. On February 7th, the agency found that refuse and sediment had filled the sediment pond located at the toe of the coal fines removal area. And then the history. About a dozen years ago, Ken Ward reports, DEP officials took over the impoundment site when a large drainage pipe became plugged and burst, sending slurry-tainted water pouring from the dam's base into the Tug Fork River. The DEP takeover followed repeated problems when other companies tried to recover waste coal from the impoundment. Recover waste coal. By the way, the special reclamation program of the DEP spent $7.5 million trying to reclaim the site. Imagine that. What would $7.5 million be to the economy of one of the poorest counties in the state? What could you do with $7.5 million? How many teachers would it pay? How many drug intervention specialists would it pay? But instead, the people of the state of West Virginia have to clean up for another coal company mess. Is it any wonder, then, that statistically, for every dollar the coal industry brings into West Virginia, we wind up paying out five? Bargain! So, it was Gary Partners LLC who reactivated the mining permit for this particular toxic hell. They were mining fine coal particles buried at the old mine site. They made what's called a royalty permit deal. And Gary Partners had repaid the state about $2.2 million of the reclamation costs. In other words, we'll help you recoup the reclamation costs if you'll allow us to go in and F the place up some more. Bargain! By Grapthar's hammer. And toward the end of the article, a little note about how these things come about. The fund that's supposed to pay for cleanup of mine sites, it's way short on cash. Why is it way short on cash? Because it's supposed to be paid into by coal operators who have to post a bond for reclamation whenever they begin work. But the bonds are ridiculously low, so there's not actually enough money in the bonds to pay for the reclamation once they're abandoned. And this state has lacked the will to impose sufficient taxation upon the coal industry to make up the shortfall. So you see how it works. I mean, it's above a public drinking water supply, but it's a different creek, because, you know, creeks don't ever run together or merge, and liquids, once poison, toxic waste liquids, once they hit the ground, well, they just stay right there. I mean, they don't sink, they don't seep or sink or leach or be absorbed. No, they just sit there, kind of like mercury on a table. Wait, there's probably mercury in it. Never mind. Randy noting, you should point out to the Horn family that the act of God determination affects the legal outcome. In a massive power outage a few decades ago, Randy says Con Ed in New York City could not be sued by its customers because the courts determined that the cause of the outage was an act of God. Yeah, that's what Pittston Coal pled as well back in 1972 when they killed 125 people in the Buffalo Creek disaster. Act of God! Asa wants to know, is Gary Partners LLC any relation to that vermin Gary Southern of Freedom Industries? Not that I know of. I think the Gary referred to there is a geographic area. Oh, brother. Brother, brother, brother. So what's next? What comes next? Who's on first? Well, there is this. There's a brand new peer-reviewed study come out today. And it has to do with those ultra-fine particulates that we've been talking about that happen, that just waft around the air in mountaintop removal sacrifice zones. The paper is pretty technical. It was published in the and peer-reviewed in the Journal of Exposure Science and Environmental Epidemiology. here's the takeaway. People who live in Appalachian areas where coal mining is prominent have increased health problems compared with people in non-mining areas of Appalachia. Coal mines and related mining activities result in the production of atmospheric particulate matter that is associated with human health effects. There is a gap in research regarding particle size concentration and distribution to determine respiratory dose around coal mining and non-mining areas. Mass and number-based size distributions were determined with an aerodynamic particle size and scanning mobility particle sizer to calculate lung deposition around mining and non-mining areas of West Virginia. Here's now this. Particle number concentrations and deposited lung dose were significantly greater around mining areas compared with non-mining areas, demonstrating elevated risks to humans. The greater dose was correlated with elevated disease rates in the West Virginia mining areas. Number concentrations in the mining areas were comparable to a previously documented urban area where number concentration was associated with respiratory and cardiovascular. So we're a good bit north of 20 now on the number of studies that show that when the search for holy prophet arrives on a mountaintop near you in central Appalachia, people are going to start getting sick and sicker and dying and deader. I think it is probably safe to say that this study, like every other one thus far, will be studiously avoided by the likes of Earl Ray Tomlin, Gert. You may recall that Gert, upon being asked once upon a time about a cancer and heart disease study in mountaintop removal areas, said, "Well, every day somebody says something else makes you sick." And that's really all. So this will be ignored by Senator Joe Manchin. It will be ignored by representing Shelley Moore Arch in a bad wig Capito. It will be ignored by Nick Joe Ray Hall. It will be ignored by Gert. It will be ignored probably by Senator Rockefeller. It will be ignored by senatorial candidate West Virginia Secretary of State Natalie Tennant. It will be ignored by almost the entirety of the West Virginia House of Delegates. It will be ignored by almost the entirety of the West Virginia State Senate. It will be ignored by the courts. It will be ignored by the coal industry. It will be ignored. It will be ignored. It will be ignored. It will be ignored. It will be ignored by everyone except those of us who understand that the coal industry is a stone-cold killer. Jesus. Kind of hard to tolerate. So you get an idea of where we're going with this evening. you want a funny? I've got a funny. I think we talked a little, a few days ago, maybe last week, about the fact that the unincarcerated folks at Freedom Industries, who it turns out were playing with some pretty large amounts of money and were making it by servicing the coal industry, well, they pretty much put paid to the tourism and hospitality industry in the nine-county area, and particularly in Charleston. And we were talking about the fact that it's going to be hard to get the tourism industry back. Well, according to the Associated Press, more than 500 tourism professionals are coming to West Virginia for a conference. No, really. And it's not like they're going to Morgantown or Berkeley Springs or Martinsburg or Parkersburg or Clarksburg or Beckley. No, they're coming to Charleston. There's an industry group called Travel South USA, an organization out of Atlanta that promotes travel and tourism within an 11-state region, generally speaking, the South. That would be, what, Virginia, West Virginia, North, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, and the Confederacy. And so, lo and behold, 500 folks are coming to West Virginia to attend the Travel South USA conference from this Sunday through February the 26th. So, in other words, the 23rd through the 26th. I wonder what these people are planning on doing for food and water. Because don't drink the stuff in Charleston. That's profitized water, and it may or may not kill you or make you sick. Because, and here's the essential problem, even to this day, way over a month after Freedom Industries caused this disaster, we still don't know. We don't know if the water's safe. All we can do is guess. Oh, brother. Just guess. So, welcome to Charleston, Travel South USA. Don't drink the water. Don't bathe in it. Try not to touch it. Don't sniff it. And just be glad when you get back home that you've got water. What are they thinking? I mean, is this a matter of taking one for the team? I don't know. I honest to Pete do not know. And by the way, in the wake of the toxic waste slurry disaster last week, DEP officials have slapped another citation for running a slipshod, dirty fly-by-night operation on Patriot Coal at the Kanawha Eagle prep plant. They've been cited for, and this is a quote, failure to minimize the disturbance of the hydrologic balance within the permit and adjacent areas in that blackened water, blackened, not poisoned, blackened water was allowed to discharge from Fields Creek into the Kanawha River, causing discoloration of a downstream section of the Kanawha River. Really, that's what it caused, discoloration. It didn't cause poisoning! And even so, the DEP finds a way to provide a little bit of cover for its friends in the coal industry. The notice of violation was issued after a rapid rise in stream levels on Fields Creek stirred up silt settled in the creek bed, resulting in the discolored water entering the Kanawha. Quote, the rise in stream levels was attributed to rapid snow melt. Sure, why not? Because the coal industry is incapable of doing any wrong. Well, just well. So, indeed, I guess it's just another day in almost toxic West Virginia. Brother. But that's not all we're going to talk about this evening. Over at DSmog blog, a little funny, a little ha-ha. Now, DSmog blog is a, and our friend Steve Horn writes there. DSmog blog does a very good job at skewering climate change denial. So imagine the surprise of the folks at DSmog blog when, lo and behold, they received an email from a producer for the Bill Falafel O'Reilly program.
I just want to rub you down. I give you a little glass of wine and rub you down with some falafel, you pinhead.
Right. And so the producer was under the gun and wrote an email, to DSmog blog. Hi, I'm a producer at the O'Reilly Factor. I'm writing up a paragraph for Bill on the best arguments against global warming being caused by humans. What would you say are the very best arguments you'd present in one paragraph? I'm working under a very tight deadline. Brendan DeMille over at DSmog blog writes, good luck, Robert and friends. It's a difficult job making stuff up so your boss can maintain his politically driven network's ignorance about climate science. Who knows? Maybe he'll surprise us this time. Stay tuned. You know, or not. Hi. O'Reilly Factor here. Could you provide us with some BS talking points, please? Because even though man-made climate change is undeniably real, we need some hacks and flacks who might be willing to say otherwise. Please, pretty please. Yeah. And I hate to tell you this, but the folks are not cooperating. These wingnuts and religion industry types are not cooperating at all in helping us keep all the religion stuff tamped into prayer meeting Wednesday. Let's take a little visit down to South Carolina, Stan, where 59-year-old August Byron Christ, no, really, Christ, is a gospel sharp, a minister of Christ Jesus. And has just been busted. Of course, you knew this was going to be a bust. Has just been busted for sexually assaulting a little girl under the age of 12. In the name of Jesus. Yeah. Investigators discovered that Pastor Christ shared pornography with the little girl and sexually abused her for about 3 months from September to November 2013. He's been charged with second-degree criminal sexual conduct with a minor under 12 and disseminating pornography to a child 12 or younger. Oh, by the way, this guy is also a frothing-at-the-mouth white supremacist, former leader of the Aryan Nation, also part of the Christian Identity Movement. He's also a Holocaust denier. And then, of course, you remember remember creepy old Tom DeLay? Tom DeLay is concerned that we are losing touch with our historical roots here in Merca. Of course, Tom DeLay long ago lost touch with reality itself. DeLay showed up on some godforsaken, global evangelism television network. Matt Hagee, son of John Starve Hagee, interviewing Tom DeLay. Let's just listen in.
There isn't a more American ideal than to impact society, do good for others, and do it in the name of God.
Yeah.
Where did we get off of that track?
I think we got off the track when we allowed our government to become a secular government. When we stopped realizing that God created this nation, that He wrote the Constitution, that it's based on biblical principles, and we allowed those that don't believe in those things to keep pushing us away from the government, and instead of standing up and being unashamedly a follower of Jesus Christ and fighting for our values in our society. I spent my entire career as a leader in the House of Representatives sort of focused on 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people who are called by my name humble themselves, pray, seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear from heaven, forgive them of their sins, and heal their land. And I've taught it to my members. I led it in Bible studies, and trying to lead members of the House to Bible studies, focused on that. I even sealed off the rotunda of the Capitol, thinking that of all people, the leaders of the nation need to take 2 Chronicles 7:14. And we sealed off the Capitol so that for 3 hours, leaders from the House and the Senate got on our knees, seeking the face of God and praying. And I really feel now, Pastor Matt, that the Lord has heard us. And I see the Holy Spirit moving. And I pray every day for an awakening in this country, and I think it's coming. And the Lord is, people have been praying for many, many years seeking the face of God, and it's coming.
Thanks to our friends at Right Wing Watch. Interestingly, when they were praying in the rotunda of the Capitol and seeking the face of the Lord, they would have been looking up at the face of George Washington being lifted into the clouds. Oddly enough, we talked about that last night. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. You got that, though? There was no laugh track. God wrote the Constitution. He said that. He actually said that. Marty asking, didn't the framers of the Constitution all sign the document? If so, I don't remember seeing the signature of God on it. Well, he writes in invisible ink, Marty. When we allowed our government to become a secular government, it started out as one. That's what that whole First Amendment thing's about. Because remember, the framers of the Constitution had much more immediate understandings of what happens when government gets all married up to religion. Things like the Catholic persecution of the Protestants, the Protestant persecutions of the Catholics, were much nearer in time to them than they are to us. But here is an out-and-out, no kidding, straight-up statement by a man who has held the reins of power in our government that he yearns for theocracy. And if you do not take him at his word, well, simply put, it is it will be our fault. Because they've told us straight up what they intend to do. Brother. And from the halls of power to, well, just forget it, Jake, it's Florida. Willie Mother Lewis, age 78, and her daughter Ruthina Lewis, age 44, did a little dine and dash down in Winter Haven, Florida. They bugged out on a breakfast tab of $18.46 at the A&G restaurant in Winter Haven. And at this point in time, Ruthina Lewis, having put her mama in the car, told the cashier if she gave them the meal for free, that the cashier would be guaranteed to go to heaven, but if she ran the credit card again, she would go to hell. And then handed the woman, the cashier, the business card of Bishop Joseph Lewis of the Church of God the Bible Way on it, and said, call him and he'll pay the bill. Then Ruthina went out to where Mama was waiting in the car, got in the car, and drove away. And the two were then arrested. Yeah. But the bishop did pay the women's bill, even though Mama Lewis had $80 in her purse. And guess what? Because the two women were prosecuted, arrested, charged with their little dine and dash stunt, the folks of the Church of God the Bible Way have taken to picketing the restaurant because the restaurant didn't appreciate Christians stealing from them, so the Christians came to persecute the business for not liking being stolen from. Meanwhile, with regard to Tom DeLay, Irish Dave points out, Bob, I don't have to tell you there is hardly any actual evidence that Hot Tub Tom DeLay pimped out his daughter, though it would be, you know, all biblical and such to do that. Yeah, I forgot about that part. No let up. This is, after all, Thorn in the Side Thursday. So let's go from, say, Florida stand to Tennessee stand. Where William Sewell, a veteran medical service investigator with the state of Tennessee for more than 40 years, has been fired, which is a good thing. And he was fired after investigating a claim filed by Sean Mullins, or maybe Sean Mullins, Mr. Mullins filed a complaint saying his mama had died when the deputy fire chief of Allgood, Tennessee, no irony there, refused to perform CPR on his mama on account of his mama was a black woman. And then the complaint charges that the whole thing was covered up. Enter William Sewell, who went to investigate the claim. Mr. Mullins says his very first question was, Mr. Mullins, have you ever been to the penitentiary? And then toward the end of the meeting, Sewell decides to, Mullins says, Mr. Sewell goes into a story about a hanging that he'd been told about the hanging of a black man. And that the hanging took place in Mr. Mullins' hometown. Mr. Sewell went into graphic detail, noting they hung him and they started carving his skin out of his back. It was like he got excited telling this story. They lowered the body and all the white men standing around took turns removing the skin from the black man's back. And then Sewell looks at him and says, you know, I've still got a strap of that man's skin. My granddaddy gave it to me. They made a strap out of his skin, and they used that strap as a knife sharpener. So, bless their heart, the Tennessee Department of Health heard the story and decided that smelled a little bit like intimidation and canned William Sewell. Now, here's the fun part. Upon being questioned about all this, William Sewell said, No, I wasn't trying to intimidate anybody. I was just trying to let them know that I understand what racism is like. If they chose to conclude that was an intimidating comment, I'm sorry. It was a gruesome story. I got caught up in the moment trying to convince these people, that I understood. And I just went too far. And then he said, Sewell did, I'm the victim because I made a mistake. Poor little victim. Yeah. Our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent me that story and, with the question, succinctly put, where do these people come from? Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Kentucky, West Virginia, Virginia, Louisiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Texas, Arkansas. Yeah, that's where they come from. Or and you know, sometimes Idaho. Yeah, Idaho. I guess the winters get kind of long and miserable in Idaho. Really long and really miserable. The story begins. The story begins with a man named the story begins with a man being caught on video. I'm sorry, I know, it's dinner, it's breakfast, it's something somewhere. The story begins with a video surreptitiously capturing the actions of a man fondling a cow's vagina. No, really. And the man who... did that was caught, and he was sentenced to 102 days incarceration for other animal abuses. Sheesh. Shower with bleach after this one. Jesus Garza was sentenced last year for jumping on a cow, twisting its tail, and was also caught. And I don't mean like jumping up and riding. I mean jumping up and down on the cow. But he also groped the cow in question. Now, all of this came to light because of an activist outfit that is concerned with animal well-being. Called Mercy for Animals. Now again, that story about the sentencing is from March 2013. Entered the Idaho legislature. Last Friday, a bill passed the Idaho State Senate based upon the video of the cow being abused, a bill passed the Idaho State Senate enhancing the penalty for fondling the genitals of a cow. A bill passed the Idaho State Senate for to enhance the penalties for jumping up and down on the ribs of a cow. No. No. Based on these abuses that took place at a place called Betancourt Dairies, and the videos showing lashings and beatings and stompings being administered to cattle. The State Senate of Idaho has passed a bill that says that if a person lies about their background on a job application in order to get access to something like Betancourt Dairy so that they can show the world the vicious cruelty that takes place inside such facilities, that person is guilty of a crime that is punishable by almost as much prison time as the person who sexually gropes a farm animal. Really. A year in jail or a $5,000 fine. And that is exactly the same thing, the same penalty to which a person who cow fondles is subject. Not kidding. Can you... a co-sponsor of the bill, it's called an ag gag bill because, you know, America does not deserve to see what the people who provide meat to America do to the meat before it becomes meat. A co-sponsor of the bill is Idaho State Senator Jim Patrick, who compared Mercy for Animals and other activists, compared them to, of course, naturally, terrorists. And then Patrick said, this is clear back in the 6th century B.C. This is the way you combat your enemies. No, he's not talking about cow groping. He's talking about people trying to expose the abuses of the meat industry to try to leverage the conscience of the people of this country. Those are the people, he says, are clear back in the 6th century B.C. 6th century B.C. where? Anybody, little help. Where in the 6th century B.C.E. was it de rigueur to take video of people who sexually fondle cattle? I mean, I think we can eliminate the Western Hemisphere simply because there were no cattle to fondle. So that leaves Europe, Africa, Asia. Right. So, okay, Marty. So you get my point. Marty noting there were cameras in the 6th century BCE. Apparently. Irish Dave, who is nothing if not irrepressible. Yeah, but Bob, did you see how the cow was dressed? Oh, brother. David Monsees is a resident of Boise, Idaho, and he said, people who are whistleblowers are terrified. They lose their jobs. They lose their careers. This bill drives another nail in their hearts. Now, who are Betancourt Dairies? Just because odds are you're not going to go in, you're not going to buy a half gallon of Betancourt ice cream. That's not the way business works in America anymore. Merca. Well, Betancourt Dairies provides some of the cheeses for Burger King and In-N-Out Burger. Now, after the revelations about the cow groping and the cow stomping and the cow lashing and the cow whipping and the cow punching, both of those outfits, Burger King and In-N-Out Burger, distanced themselves, according to the report. Does that mean that they quit using cheese from Betancourt? I don't know. Do you go to In-N-Out Burger? We don't have them here. Might it be worthwhile to ask them if they are still purchasing cheese from Betancourt Dairies? Maybe. Good God. And so the Idaho State Legislature responds by trying to make sure this doesn't happen anymore. I mean, by doesn't happen anymore, that no one else takes video of cattle having straps attached to their neck and being dragged while alive by a tractor. Or having a worker jump up and down on the cow for the F-all of it. Or having the worker grope the genitals of the cow, you know, because capitalism, right? I love cheese. I love ice cream. I'm kind of a dairy freak. I like meat too. But these rotten, money-grubbing, profiteering sons of bitches are doing everything in their power to turn me into a vegan, and I'm going to hate it when I am one. Just sitting around eating dried up weeds and sunflower seeds and reading astrological postcards, it's going to suck. But they're leaving me no alternative. No more hot dogs from Dick Howell's Pit Barbecue. No more ribs from Dreamland. No more steaks. No more pulled pork. Just sitting around trying to pretend that Tempa's food. But what do you do? And I'm not kidding. I have dramatically cut back on my meat intake. A lot of rice, a lot of beans, a lot of ramen, sometimes even the fancy kind with the flavor boosters. Cut way back. And it's not even so much a health thing as it is that it's gotten to where every time I look in the meat case, I see some animal getting tortured for lunch. No, Texas Betsy, tempeh is not food. It's kind of revolting, at least to me, meat eater that I am, or may soon not be. But I guess, you know, at some point in time, I'm going to reach maximum critical moral overload. And, oh well. Yeah, see, Marty understands. No more Polish sausages or brats at the ballpark. Sniff. Yeah. Darlene with a note. Cattle abuse in the Idaho legislature. When I hear stories like this, I can't help but think, this country really blows. And I understand that sentiment, Darlene. But the larger question, I think, is the people we elect to represent us in this country in many states really blow. I mean, how in God's name do you look at the horrors that, and this is all video, there's video evidence of all of this stuff. It's conclusive. How do you look at these videos of these pathetic animals being brutalized and reach the conclusion that the problem is not that there are people brutalizing the animals, but the problem is that people are telling people that the animals are being brutalized? What portions of the human brain are missing in the Idaho state senator who reached that conclusion? Maybe it's not what's missing, but what's present, and what's present is money and lots of it. Oh, dear. Kathy in Arizona noting, Bob, In-N-Out Burger has great burgers, but they also have Bible verses tucked in out-of-the-way places on cups and such. What? No, apparently it's true. Over at Snopes, cups and burger wrappers at In-N-Out Burger are marked with Bible citations. The folks at Snopes writing, throughout the years, the especially sharp-eyed have noticed the presence of cryptic name and number notations on burger wrappings and disposable cups used at In-N-Out Burger, a popular chain of hamburger eateries in California, Nevada, Arizona, Texas, and Utah. These tiny notations are placed in out-of-the-way spots, the undersides of cups, and near the seams of the paper pouches burgers are placed in. No overt explanation is given for the presence of the odd phrases or their meaning. They just quietly sit there awaiting decipherment by those moved to do so. Let's see. Soda cup has the notation John 3:16. The milkshake cup lists Proverbs 3:5. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thine own understanding. So, I don't know, maybe that means that if you just kind of pay attention to God, your conscience won't be bothered by the fact that your cheese came from a cow that got dragged around by the neck by a tractor. Let's see, John 14:6, Jesus saith unto him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me, and cattle cometh unto the Father by a strap wrapped around their throat and dragged by a tractor. The cheeseburger and hamburger wrappers have a verse from Revelations. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come into him and will sup with him, and he with me, and then we will go out and drag a living cow around with a strap attached to its neck by a tractor. That's Revelation 3:20. Let's see. The wrapper for the double-double burger. The Lord is good, from Nahum 1:7. The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that trust him to wrap a strap around the neck of a living cow and drag it around by a tractor. Then there's the French fry holder, Proverbs 24:16. For though a righteous man falls seven times, he rises again, but the wicked are brought down by calamity while fondling the genitals of a cow. Oh, for pity's sake. Thanks, Kathy. Randy points out, I turned to Greek yogurt and beans, but now maybe not even Greek yogurt is safe. Not if it's from Betancourt Dairies of Idaho Stan. Irish Dave pointing out, how soon we forget, cheese is his lard, to also the way. Interesting observation from Texas Betsy. She says, you know, in Judaism, we take the prohibition of destroying God's name pretty seriously, never putting prayer books or a book of Torah onto the floor, burying holy books rather than putting them in dumpsters, etc. Why would Christians put Bible verses on napkins and cups? Well, y'all are not real big on proselytizing either, at least in the modern era. I understand there was some going on back when the camels weren't there, but this is not then. So there's no need to put Torah verses on a coffee cup. But in this country that says it's 80% religious, there need to be constant reminders, because you never know when one of those 20%ers is gonna get hold of a milkshake from In-N-Out Burger and suddenly come to Jesus. It is the profound zeal of the missionary. Yeah. Randy asking, what sort of judge is in approval of these ag gag laws? Well, they haven't really been tested in court. This thing's just making its. There have been ag gag laws in other states as well. They're making their way through the through various legislatures. This one's making its way through Idaho's. But again. Constitution, who cares? Because God wrote the Constitution, and if he wanted people to be running around videotaping cattle getting abused at a dairy facility, well, maybe he would have given us the technology to be able to invent cameras. Oh, wait. So maybe that provides a little bit of a sense of what the what the evening holds on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. You, of course, are welcome to bring issues you prefer to the table. In fact, I encourage you so to do. The number 304-658-3333 on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. That's how you get in the program into the program that way. And either way is fine by me. Lines open. Light them up if you want to. We'll take a little break and come back. This is Conversation Radio, listener supported. This is The Horn.
Upon me, for souls, I'll build water in, blood in the water. Don't drink the water. Don't drink the water. Don't drink the water.
Thanks to Isaac for the suggestion. The Dave Matthews Band and a live rendition of Don't Drink the Water. And thanks going out also to our good friend Sal. Sal got us started on answering Robert's 20th of the month Down Under Up Over challenge. And there remains yet $45 to be matched in order for Robert to match the match. And our fundraising goal this evening is about $130, $125 now. I really appreciate Robert putting forward his monthly 20th of the month Down Under Up Over challenge. PayPal button, or just send me a note saying, hey, it's going in the mail, and then I'll let Boss Man Wayne know to keep an eye out for its arrival. Let's see. Back to the mailbag. A note from our friend Harry in Baltimore. Tom DeLay's holy behaviors with fallen women. When Tom DeLay was a powerful figure in the House of Representatives, there were rumors that he regularly consorted with Mexican prostitutes. Not being an expert in the New Testament, Harry says, I have forgotten whether perfectly devout Christians are considered more holy or less holy for helping prostitutes. Please remind me of which behavior is more holy and which behavior would be more lawful in a country with a legal code written by God. Prostitution is frowned upon. In fact, in that culture back in the day, even though the story was added by a later scribe and was never a part of the original Book of Mark, one of the most moving passages of the Gospels is when Jesus prevents a group of holier-than-thou villagers from obeying the law of God and murdering a prostitute on the spot. He does so by saying, "Let that person among you who is without sin cast the first stone." And that's when the rock comes hurtling up out of the back of the crowd, whacks Jesus in the head, and he looks around for a minute and he goes, "Honestly, Mom, sometimes you really piss me off." But no, that's none of that was in the actual gospel. But it is, you know, it's a way of pointing out the rough vigilante justice that was administered at the time. Women who engaged in prostitution were killed out of hand. There's a lot of reasons in the law for women to be killed out of hand. So I'd say, yeah, Tom DeLay consorting with... yeah, I don't think he was reading Bible verses. Do you, Harry? No, me neither. Let's go to the phones, 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, and I was interested about you talking about the vegan diet and everything.
Uh-huh.
Well, my partner, 2.5 years ago, had a very bad heart attack. He was in Baylor Cardiac Center for 4 days, and he went on a vegan diet. And the first time he went back to his cardiologist for an examination, the cardiologist said, I have never seen anyone in my career lower their cholesterol and triglycerides like you have on a diet.
And see, that's the thing. There's a really profoundly good argument for me going down that road.
Well, see, I've lost 40 pounds on it.
Wow.
Yeah. All of you have all sorts of wonderful rices and beans and lentils. Oh, I love lentils. And one that I haven't tried yet is called forbidden rice.
Forbidden?
Mm-hmm. According to what it said on the package, that it's called forbidden rice because when it was developed in China many, many, many years ago, only the emperor was allowed to eat it.
Huh.
And that's called forbidden rice. I'll let you know how it is when I try it.
Well, I will be very, very curious to know typically I think about, you know, your short grain sushi rice and my favorite of all rices, it's kind of a toss up between basmati and jasmine rice.
I like wild rice. Of course, it's not a rice.
Grass
seed.
Yeah, that's. I still have a little bit stashed away from my last trip to northern Wisconsin, and I'm trying to save it for something special.
Oh, yeah, I do that. Yes, I
would. I was talking to one fella up there, who said that when they would the Anishinaabe word for it is manumen.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that his mom, when they would have wild rice for dinner and have some left over, he said when he was a boy, his mom would add the leftover wild rice to pancake batter and make wild rice pancakes.
Wow.
Which just struck me as being something that would probably, because, you know, it's got a beautiful flavor.
Yeah, we'll see.
And I'll bet you that would be real tasty.
Like that. Oh yeah, I love things like that.
Yeah, I kid around about vegetarianism, and veganism. It can save lives, as you note, and it saved Dennis Kucinich's life.
Yep.
One of the real impediments around here, all kidding aside, is. Trying to have enough access to do it.
That's a big problem because people out in the hinterlands of this country don't have that privilege. Oh, and by the way, something just popped into my fevered mind. You know, Walmart's profits have been going down. Did you hear that?
Oh yes, and they're blaming it on the food stamp.
Absolutely. they are being blown up on their own petard or whatever you call it.
Yes. I just have this mental picture of the CEO there in Bentonville, Arkansas, picking up the phone and calling John Boner and he goes, "What's got into your crazy Merlot sodden head, son?"
Well, I'll let you go. You all take care. I enjoy the program always, but I want to tell you about veganism. And if you want to lose,
well, I mean, has it? I mean, has it been? Has it been? Has it been a challenge for you and your partner to?
It wasn't for him, but it was for me.
Well, I don't mean. I mean,
from the South.
Yeah, that part of it. But I mean, is it a challenge to learn how to do it and to access the right groceries?
Go on the internet, and you will have more on there than you ever wanted to know.
So you order in a lot of stuff?
No, because we've got Whole Foods, and we've got the Central Market, and we've got all these places, plus a wonderful, wonderful farmer's market where we can go get all sorts of fresh vegetables and everything like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't. I got the Wiggling Pig 6 miles up the road, and then another 20 miles, and I'm at Kroger's.
Oh dear. I remember the first time I went back to North Carolina, went down to Moorhead, and there was this store. It said Piggly Wiggly. I said, "What the hell is that?"
Yep. It was. Ours was a food land, but then it started going belly up. and it became a Piggly Wiggly. And frankly, it is a much better grocery store as a Piggly Wiggly than it ever was as a Foodland. Prices have gone down, quality's gone up, and I mean, shucks, I was surprised as all get out. I went in there and I was able to buy some Kalamata olives not too long back.
Well, I'll be damned.
Which I do love. By the way, I got a link here to the forbidden rice. Man, it looks, it's a black rice.
Yeah.
And apparently is just loaded with antioxidants.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be real good for you. No wonder the emperor of China was only the person allowed to eat it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look into this.
Well, you take care and check out the vegan diets on the internet. They've got all sorts of books and lectures and everything.
All right. Thank you, Edward.
Yeah, you take care.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Bye.
Our good friend Edward calling from Dallas. Yeah, this stuff, I love rice. This stuff looks really tasty. And all kidding, I mean, I joke about what would, you know, life losing its meaning and by not eating meat. But no, you can look. I mean, you put me in the middle of a culture that does the Indian version of vegetarianism. You know, I can sit there and eat that stuff all day long. It's delicious. And it, you know, I make a pretty mean tofu chili. But man, when you're steeped. And what Edward says about, you know, I'm from the South. Yeah, I'll have some meat with my meat and you know, a side of fat back. It's a tough Jones to break. It really, really is. Big thanks going out to Diane in Kansas, Stan. We are now only $15 away from meeting Robert's Down Under Up Over Challenge. Thank you, Diane. Thank you very, very kindly. Note from Darlene. Forbidden rice is delicious. It's a black, very flavorful rice, and oh man, it's delightful. And that's the very link I went to, Darlene. Lotus Foods. Lotus Foods sells forbidden rice. And if you want to go have a look at it, lotusfoods.com. That is an unpaid endorsement. There are some things that need to happen around here, but I'm going to look into cold turkey is hard to do in any form, whether it be smoking or food. But I've cut my meat intake way, way back, and you know, I get the sense it's not so much the meat that would be giving up the meat that's a problem, although it's a problem. But the dairy, wow. Because I've tried the soy milk, and I've tried the almond milk, and no. No. Oh, Nydia says, share the tofu chili recipe. I use the extra firm tofu in place of the ground beef. It's vegetarian, not necessarily vegan, because... but I like to use Mayakoba beans instead of kidney beans. And I like to make, as I was talking about with Jim last night, I like to make my own chili sauce. Rehydrate the big dried chilies, get all the seeds and the stems out, cut them into manageable pieces, rehydrate them in boiling water, save the water, and then, process the chilies in a food processor. And then run them through a Foley food mill to get rid of the skins, because that's really unchewable and undigestible. And you get this really rich, red, spicy chili paste. And then in goes the cumin, in goes the garlic, and as Jim noted last night, if you add some mushrooms to your chili, especially a meatless chili if you're using tofu, it also adds to the substance of it, and I'm making myself quite hungry, as a matter of fact. So that's basically it. I like lots of garlic, lots of cumin. Not so much, as mentioned, I'm not so much with the cinnamon. Um, Jessica pointing out, you can grow a lot of what you need both in the ground and in a makeshift hothouse in going vegan. Very inexpensive. There's also something called the urban farmer, which gives you get growing ideas. Yeah, I want to get back to my garden, too. Here, the problem is deer. After you have expended the effort of putting in a garden only to see it eaten by a herd of deer, they stop being the cute little animals from Bambi, and you start just seeing great big rats with antlers. Thank you very much to Henry. We have now completed the Down Under Up Over Challenge. As Robert noted in his challenge, he said, rolling back down to it here, he said, I'm putting $50 on the table. I'd like someone to match that. Then I'd like someone else to match that. And then a further someone else to match that. Let's build a little rainy day fund or a replace the aging equipment fund. So the challenge has been met. That leaves $30 in tonight's remaining fundraising goal. So if it went the way Robert described, that would take care of tonight's fundraising. Something else. I mentioned the program Starcrossed last night because the right-wingers had a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy about there wasn't no under God in the pledge. Remember? So I mentioned it last night, and Robert went off and took one for the team. He said, after the mention of Starcrossed yesterday, I gave it a look-see. Aliens flee dying planet. Alien spacecraft crashes almost vertical into small-town America, where it remains standing for 10 years. Later we see it being taken apart. Alien crash survivor walks out into open field with hands open in a friendly gesture and is immediately shot by the military. Standing their ground, perhaps, asks Robert. Other crash survivors try to defend themselves and are shot to pieces. To save money, the aliens all look human apart from some skin markings. The overhyped media reports the crash as an invasion. Young alien runs off and, in a scene straight out of E.T., is found hiding in a garden shed by a young girl who looks after him with a blanket and food, etc., before the military also shoot him. Story jumps 10 years. Seven alien teens, they're called Atrians, are allowed to attend high school. Atrians? That's kind of phonetically close to Africans, really? The school is surrounded by military, and the protesters outside the school are made up of the usual suspects. Meanwhile, the media continue to report a greater plan to colonize Earth by the Atrians. We're 7 minutes in by this point, and I'm already not enjoying the show, says Robert. Forget making pledges. You know, that occurs at the 14-minute mark. All the teens look like they're in their early 20s, and from here on in, it's just another teens at school show. Dumb jocks, you breathe our air and eat our food. Why won't you Martians pledge allegiance to our flag? If the writers and producers are trying to make a point, all I'm getting is that people in the U.S. are paranoid and gun-happy. Well, that's pretty much accurate. Tune in again next week, says Robert. No, it's not really that interesting, and I've seen it all before. P.S., mind you, it looks like U.S. schools have solved their funding problems by 2024. Holograms, wall screens, lockers with fingerprint ID. And that part about, where is it? The media continues to report a greater plan to colonize Earth by the Atrians. Yeah. Ripped from the pages of today's headlines. This was posted to my Facebook page. Joe put it up there. Thanks, Joe. Too good to pass up. Remember, the aliens are going to colonize Earth? Well, I give you Phyllis Schlafly and Alex Jones.
what these polls consistently show is that three-fourths of the Hispanics coming in want a bigger government providing more services. I'm talking about services like health care, Obamacare, and only a tiny percentage even understand or want a smaller government. And you know that if we want to leave a country of freedom and prosperity to our children and grandchildren, we've got to cut down the size of government, stop these executive actions that Obama is taking on his own, which he is doing unilaterally and says he can do whatever he wants with his pen. It's all so rotten, Alex, and the high-handed dictatorial way that Obama's doing it is amazing. But these polls are very compelling in showing what the people think about this. And they're not voting for amnesty. They're voting for handouts by the government. And they get that by voting Democratic.
And then they'll support literally making those of us that produce their slaves. And then George Soros and Warren Buffett, big constituents of the Democrats and big recipients of corporate welfare. And then they write the laws to be exempt from the taxes. They're lobbying to raise taxes on the middle class. This takes us back to a democracy where two wolves can vote to eat the sheep for dinner.
Yeah, it'd be a joke if it weren't so really tragic.
Yeah, it would be scary if it weren't so entirely fictional. They're literally going to make us their slaves. Is that art imitating life or life imitating art? I haven't decided which. So at least with Robert having taken one for the team, we know that we don't have to bother watching Star-Crossed. Let's go back to the phones. Line's open, 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, good evening.
What do you say, Bill?
Well, you've got me, again, Bob, you always have me thinking about things. Now, these hamburgers that carry biblical messages on the wrappers?
Yeah.
Well, I've thought of something. You know, the
I got to thinking, Bill, and I wondered, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to just jump on you there. I got to wondering if there's anything about, if maybe there's a Bible verse about not eating pork on, say, the bacon cheeseburger.
Yeah. Well, first of all, my memory of what my ex-father-in-law taught me is correct. Eating pork was bad enough, but meat and cheese together. Just the cheeseburger in itself was not something that...
No, you don't. You can't eat milk and meat in the...
Absolutely. See, you retain what you learn, you know. And I tell you, I got a good education from him. He taught Sunday school to kids, and my ex-mother-in-law worked at one of the local houses of worship. And you know, I'm telling you, I don't care what you learn; it's something. It's something worth learning. And my theory about people eating pork or not eating pork was, I don't know if it has anything to do with what's written in a book, but the truth of the matter was that damn stuff better be cooked properly, and especially in the pre-refrigeration days. It's what does it carry?
Trichinosis?
Yeah, trichinosis, which...
The trichina worm.
Yeah, it sounds like something you do on Halloween, but... There's another thing which I won't touch with that word trick, you know.
Yeah.
I've been around too long. But, you know, you've got me an idea to market something. Maybe I can make some money out of it, which I'll share with you if it sells.
Okay.
You know, printing stuff on hamburger wrappers, how about if I market the replacement for corn cobs and Sears catalogs with pictures of Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly?
Oh, I think you got something there, Bill.
Yeah. Well, you know, they can even autograph it if they want to. They can put up a phony autograph on it.
But then again, now wait a minute. Okay, let's think this through real quick. I don't know about you, but wouldn't you feel kind of creepy about putting Sean Hannity's face down there?
Yeah, well, I'd be giving him a crappy deal, but...
Sorry. He'll be here all week.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a bad thing to say.
Don't try the veal.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I did that the other day, and I said, you know, now I know why. For some reason, it didn't have the same kick that it had when I was a young person. Or maybe it's the way it was cooked compared to the other. Because the Hungarian restaurants I'm used to, they instead of serving a lettuce salad, you got cucumbers, buddy. A cucumber salad these guys served applesauce on the side instead of red cabbage or, something along those lines. And to me, ethnicity is ethnicity, and that's why you go to taste the stuff, you know. I used to hang out in an Italian restaurant. I'd even wash dishes for them when I'd be collecting unemployment for working in a knitting mill that was closed January through February as the new styles of knit goods were being put up on the machinery. The damn machinery was patented in 1905, Bob. When I first walked in there, I expected to see some kid right out of Charles Dickens working there in some little kid, you know. The Industrial Revolution. But yeah, you should try marketing stuff. The whole idea of the way I'm surprised that, I'm kind of shocked by the way these animals are being treated in this century, in this day and age, and this era of knowledge that you and I take for granted. The knowledge of, it's bad enough you eat the damn things. But that, the only thing you can do with that is you can point to it, well, this is how you survive yourself. But, you know, they always used to tell you how humane they were they used stunners, you know. They'd hit them with a stunner and then kill them.
Oh, yeah.
But nowadays you're telling me these guys are having fun with critters.
Well, see, but there's really nothing new in it, Bill, because these kinds of stories have been coming out for years. I mean, I remember it goes all the way back to when I was still on terrestrial radio in America's fifth smallest radio market or whatever it is. And somebody from PETA or another organization had gotten into a chicken processing facility and showed the workers there stomping the chickens, throwing them against walls. It was horrifying.
Well, that attitude, of course, carries over to the fact that they're going to sell this to you and you're going to put it inside yourself.
Yeah, and I have my personal theory is that the brutalizing of the workers leads to the brutalizing of the animals.
Well, I'll go along with that, Bob. The reason I had the attitude I had about certain types of people, and if they were bullying me or pushing me, there's liable to be a lot of problems for everybody. And again, it's the same thing. When these people see this, the bosses let them get away with it, and the supervisors, and I don't know, The Jungle was one hell of a book. That's all I can tell you.
Maybe it needs to be reissued or turned into a blockbuster motion picture or something to get the idea back out there in the public consciousness.
Well, what they've done with books in schools, and I don't know, you've had kids pass through the modern school system. The reading lists are crap today. Because things like The Jungle were on the reading lists of high school kids years ago. Was it the system was being run by leftists or liberals or whatever you want to call them? What happened to those days? The book Grapes of Wrath, for Christ's sake. You read that in high school.
Not anymore.
Exactly. And how were they able to get away with that?
it all, you know, a lot of this stuff starts with the ascendancy of Ronald Reagan, as do so many of our national dilemmas, problems, and crises, Bill.
Well, I had friends.
Because, you know, remember when his brand of wild-eyed, radical, right-wing Republicanism got hold of the country, remember, it's the destruction of the Department of Education has long been one of those masturbatory fantasies of the Republican right wing.
Well, I think,
and they started putting it into practice. So if you can't just outright eliminate the Department of Education, you start screwing up the education system so that then you can say that the government schools are a failure. And from Reagan to George W. Bush and No Child's Behind left,
yeah,
you know, No Child's Behind left was nothing except a very thinly veiled, if veiled at all, attempt to create failures in the public school system.
Yeah. Well, that way you can, number one, you can change people's way of thinking, and you can break the teachers' union, that damn nasty word union. It all fits together like a big shithead crossword puzzle, is what it does after a while. And, you know, you got to watch it, because me, I start thinking sometimes, well, Bill, you're being paranoid. You're, you know, your cynical way of thinking. You're looking at for and at the worst of our people's behavior.
Yeah.
But it's true. What they're doing has been, I remember when Reagan was governor of California, I had friends going to school there, and I'd get stuff mailed to me in the good old plain brown envelope, you know. What was the thing in the old men's magazines you could send away for certain pictures? And the thing was sent to you in a plain brown envelope. And I used to say, yeah, I marked sex books. You know, that they marked in big letters on the outside of the plain brown envelope. Because that's... But Reagan was battling the students in California when he was governor. And I guess I have to be a certain age, but most people are so tied into trying to make a living, just trying to survive, can take away most of your time and energy and such. I got called today that I'm going to be doing some local TV work, just what I always wanted, you know. And as I say, I don't know if you saw the article that he did in The Plain Dealer on me, but I think it...
Oh, I saw, yeah, Isaac sent me an article last night, and I love the quote from you about you had worked on TV so old that they once broadcast a Cleveland Browns national championship.
Yep, exactly. Well, the other one I used to tell use on people was they had a lot of boxing matches years ago, but the set I had was so old it was two white guys boxing, which, you know. That was
cool. Now I'm gonna get the mail.
Well, that's kind of true, though. I mean, I'll tell you what. Do you ever see Sugar Ray Robinson in the ring?
Oh yeah. I mean, not live or
not live. Yeah, but who was he boxing? Was it Carmen Basoyo? That he was chronically boxing. I don't know. It was another middleweight, and these guys met so many times. Because when they fought, buddy, they skillful and, you know, boxer. I never took to the sport too much. I've seen some good ones.
Sooner or later, it bothers your conscience.
Yeah.
I mean, around here, everybody's into Ultimate Fighting.
Yeah.
And I watch that stuff, and my stomach turns. And I'm sorry if that makes me sound like some sort of, well, I don't know what, but I just, I can't. It's hard enough.
I could never, that stuff is not choreographed then. This is, these guys are for real. Huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they'll be sitting there punching it out, and then all of a sudden this foot will come up out of nowhere and just catch somebody behind the ear. And it's almost like you can see his brains moving inside his skull, and you're thinking, well, that's going to be fun about 20 years down the road when he can't remember his name.
Yeah, boxing played hell with so many guys, including Muhammad Ali. who probably had one of the sharpest wits and smartest mouths on a professional boxer I ever saw in my life. Because Muhammad, when he decided to let loose with a strain of humor, he could do it. Or with some deep thinking that would come out. But the way he'd bring it out, had you smile about it and say, yeah, you're right, but you're smiling when you say it. You're in complete agreement with the man, but the way he handled it was enough to make you smile when you were thinking about it, which maybe made it more positive in your mind that the guy was right when you were happy with what you heard, you know?
Yeah.
Because it made so much sense. But yeah, the Ultimate Fighting, I was watching that for a while, but even with bad eyes, I couldn't understand it. But as I say, I don't know, was it you I was talking to about boxing? And I think it's a dead issue. Because I can't even tell you who the heavyweight champion is.
I can't either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the name Joe Louis, when I was 5 years old, everybody in this country knew that name. And then I think did he fight Ezzard Charles?
Well, you know, after, it seems like Mike Tyson and of course, Evander Holyfield.
Yeah.
But, you know, something happened after, you know, the heyday of Frazier and Ali had passed.
Yeah, I think they brought it, those two men brought this to a real climax.
It's kind of the same way I feel about NBA basketball. Yeah. I'll probably get mail on this too. But after the era of Magic and Bird.
Yeah.
It got saved by Michael Jordan.
Yeah, Jordan was.
And now it's I guess it's all about LeBron, but
yeah,
it doesn't have the magic. And I don't mean Magic Johnson. I mean there's something pedestrian about in NBA basketball to me. I mean, sorry.
Well, when I was a kid, it was Bill Russell and Will Chamberlain. Watching those two men match up was unbelievable contest. And who was it? Was it Harry, the Jewish author that had, you know, Only in America, and Harry, was his name Harry Golden? I forget now. But he brought out that during the Depression era, man, there were more lightweight and welterweight Jewish fighters coming out of New York City during the Depression. Isn't that weird? I guess the lower the cash flow, the more people will enter whatever it is where they can make a living.
Yeah, anything for a way out.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we have this stereotypical thing about people of Jewish descent. Aren't they all rich?
Not right.
I've known too many, you know, that aren't. So that's why it's hard to sell me a stereotype, because if you're really around people, you meet people that don't have an iota of some kind of stereotypical crap in them, you know?
They're
just, they are themselves, and not just a product of a society.
But see, you have to have kind of an open and questing mind, Bill, in order to reject that kind of stuff. It's because it's much easier just to relax onto the stereotypes and it's been said before and will be said again. You know, for instance, fascism is easy to live under. All you got to do is keep your head down and try to pretend that you're not aware of all the nasty business going on around you.
Take orders.
And to a certain extent, the same, you know, the stereotypes arise out of authoritarian mindsets. Or so it seems to me.
Amen. And it was a big part of my dad left me with two damn books that were disappeared somewhere. Showbiz from Vaude to Video and a book on vaudeville. And when the neighborhoods in Cleveland were chopped up hard into little ethnic areas, and they'd have amateur comics who would get up and They'd have the heavy accent, like the people in the audience, and they would play games with them, talk, you know, because they were part of the same group, so they could make jokes about the shit that the people had to put up with. And that would get nods of approval from the audience saying, yeah, you're right, you're 100% correct. Because who was it, the Southern comic that was so big about 10, 15 years ago?
Foxworthy?
Yeah. That was his act.
Yeah.
You might be a redneck.
Yeah. And there's a certain amount of truth to it. Because certain people from a certain background seem to could are potentially acting quite the same way. There was another guy in Saturday Evening Post who did a Pennsylvania Dutch written written routine in the Saturday Evening Post humor thing. I think his name was Heinrich Schnabel. And he spoke with that heavy Pennsylvania Dutch accent, inflection, and word usage.
You be careful among the English.
Yeah. And after the end of the thing, whoever he was, some pitch man or salesman who was talking, was talking the same way the comedian was. You know, he had adapted his language and had broken into it. They say there's so much when you read about performance and such in the 20s, and especially before radio grabbed everything, when it was a lot of amateur comics. Now, there's a lot of them working today. I hear a show on college radio by these guys, but the problem with me is maybe I'm an old square John, but whatever they say doesn't seem to make me laugh much, you know?
Well, then, if that's the case, then geezerhood is catching, Bill.
Yeah.
Because there are things that just make Ferg and Margie and Doodle howl.
Yeah.
And I can sit there and watch it, and, I mean, I'm as stone-faced as a graven image.
Yeah. Well,
and eventually I'll look at him and say, this is funny? Yeah. Oh, this is great, Dad. Yeah, okay. You kids.
Well, again, I was through a golden age from people like Shelley Berman and, you know, the guys doing record. Oh, what was it, the First Family?
Oh,
up to a point, they were pretty good.
Yeah, who was that guy? Absolutely made his career because he did a perfect John Kennedy.
Yeah. Of course, that came to a grinding halt.
Yeah.
You know, due to what happened to the president.
By the way, in answer to what we were talking about earlier, Marty notes, no wonder you don't know the name of the heavyweight boxing champion. There are 5 championship belts.
Oh, good.
The WBC championship is vacant.
Yeah.
Apparently the WBC champion stepped down, Marty says. The other 4 belts are held by one, and Ron had mentioned this as well. The other 4 heavyweight champion belts are held by Vladimir Klitschko of Ukraine.
Okay.
And, yeah, he's kin to the opposition leader.
I don't know if anybody else ever saw this, but I was watching some boxing on TV one night.
Oh, and it was Vaughn Meter, by the way.
Vaughn Meter, yeah.
Meter, yeah.
Yeah. This boxing match ends with the crowd was fighting. People in the crowd had squared off. And damn it, you don't hear much about it, but I happened to be watching it that night, and I'm sitting there going, what the hell is this? When audience members, fans, were pushing, shoving, and punching each other, I said, now we've reached a new low here. We've got to this point with the crowd. Well, I've seen plenty of that at professional football.
Yeah.
the one thing that I always will remember was the Eagles played the Browns. And you ever hear of a guy named Chuck Bednarik?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Concrete Charlie.
Well, after the game, he walked up behind a guy who later coached the Pittsburgh Steelers, who was playing guard for the Browns, playing offensive guard. He spun him around and punched him in the face. And the camera caught it. Of course, I think the worst thing, I'll let you go with this one, the worst thing, it was the Thanksgiving Day game. I don't know if I've talked about it. But they had a big parabolic mic, and there was a play run out of bounds, and you heard a voice say, where are you going to spot spot the Zeke, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You, bleep. And then it came through. It was Thanksgiving Day between Detroit and Green Bay, and I'm thinking, yeah, here's families all over the country sitting around watching this. And some kid in the audience say, what did he just say, Dad? Uh-oh. What do you tell him, man? You make something up in a hurry.
He said something that if you say it, I'm going to stick a bar of soap in your mouth. How's that?
Exactly. Well, I'll let you go, but, yeah, the idea of printing gospel messages on a hamburger wrapper, that's,
Does kind of make you want to run rabbits, doesn't it?
Well, let's put it this way. It's not in good taste. Anyway, I'll talk to you.
All right. Take it easy, Bill.
Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Yeah, see, And I've heard great things about In-N-Out Burger, but I don't need a Bible verse with my, I just don't. Oh, goodness me. Let's see, let's keep it rolling, go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
How are you this evening?
Pretty good, Jim, how about you?
Okay, I would prefer not to even think or talk about ground beef or whatever, and that's about it.
It will put that, yeah, that story just didn't do me any good either.
No.
Not running out for a burger after the program.
How can you call a place In-N-Out Burger? I was just thinking of that James Bond movie with Roger Moore. What was the name of it? The one that takes place in India. Octopussy.
Yes.
And the girls were rowing in, out, in, out. They had so many subliminal messages in some of those films. They really did.
Well, they had fun tweaking the ratings board with them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The only thing I wanted to say is I just caught a film I wanted to recommend to you. I sent you an email on it. Lost Horizon.
Oh, I love that film.
Have you seen the original film that they remastered?
I haven't seen it in a very long time, but I mean, yeah, the black and white, what, Ronald Coleman?
Yeah, Ronald Coleman and Jane Wyman and Thomas Mitchell. And anyway, it's just a beautiful film. The trouble is they lost so much of it because it was a nitrate-based film, and they started to restore it back in 1973, and I'm sure they were worried about getting blown up when they tried to do it. But what they did, they actually used stills to cover the parts of the film that they could not recover. I mean, you know, nitrate-based film was a dangerous thing to handle back in those days.
That's my understanding. It could get downright volatile.
As a matter of fact, anybody who had, like David O. Selznick, for example, his projection room was built out of reinforced concrete.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Sure was.
For precisely that reason?
Yeah. And I had a friend of mine in New York that I used to see a good bit. And, oh, back in the 70s and 80s, and he worked for Paramount. And anyway, he had this call from Gloria Swanson because she wanted to try to get some of her films preserved and stuff like that. And when he opened the cans of those things, some of it just turned brown. And they had to call the New York City Bomb Squad to get them out of there.
Holy cow.
Because if those films had gone off having degenerated, because they basically degenerated into nitroglycerin, essentially the effect was the same, it would have taken down the whole building in which she lived. So we've lost a lot on film and stuff like that, but that's one they did remaster. Then they did a remake on it in 1972, I think, with George Kennedy.
Yeah, I remember that one, too. But by far the black and white one is the better film. And the book is awfully darn good, too.
It's wonderful. And the scenes they showed of that thing, the Art Deco of 1937, were almost transplanted to a certain extent to the New York 1939 World's Fair.
Really?
Now, a lot of the buildings, I mean, they follow the same motif. You know, my mother visited that fair. I mean, I wasn't even thought of when she visited that fair, but brought back a lot of stuff from it. and I have a whole collection of things that she brought back. And it was just the world of tomorrow. And when you think about in the summer of 1939 what was going on across the Atlantic Ocean and, you know, what Herr Hitler was contemplating at his mountain retreat, the Berghof, well, it was basically the last vestige of hopes and peace. And I think that fair went on until 1940. And Grover Whalen was the guy who was in charge of it for New York. But even to see the buildings and things like that that they built, the World of Tomorrow, the Trilon, the Perisphere, even today are marvelous, even by our standards. I mean, this Perisphere was a huge thing in which you could ride, according to what my mom told me, you could ride around inside. And, of course, they had all types of television. It was called the World of Tomorrow. They had the Homes of Tomorrow, everything. So much hope was predicated upon that. And, of course, one nation refused to exhibit that year, and that was, of course, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And but they had some wonderful things, and I treasure these things that were left to me. And I'm still an avid collector of anything from that fair. And like I say, they had a lot of good ideas back then. I mean, it's just incredible the films that came out in the late 30s. For example, that film was, Things to Come. Have you seen that?
Yeah, a long time ago, yes.
Okay. Well, the designers of that time really were very far-thinking and extremely good at what they did. And it told the tale, it certainly did.
I find that era of, and you know, that's kind of the midpoint of the technological expansion of the last 150 years or so. And there was a lot of optimism. And it extends up into the mid-1950s to early 1960s optimism about where science and technology could take us. At the same time that there's a nuclear arms race unfolding. And so there was this constant dynamic tension between the idea that science and technology could deliver us into a magnificent, prosperous future in juxtaposition against the idea that science and technology might just erase us from the planet.
Well, the arc sort of began to drop. I remember the movie Forbidden Planet, which I love with oh my Lord, I can't remember the people who were in that film. It was
a classic by any measure.
He was the Mrs. Miniver. But anyway, and they went from that until, and that was in 56, 57, until all of a sudden Neville Shute's book came out, On the Beach.
Yeah.
Now, if you really want something to make you feel grand and just make you feel good, take a look at that.
Is your tongue firmly in your cheek?
No, but I'll tell you, it was a good film, and it certainly, when I was 14 years old when it came out, and I saw it, it's one of those things that you'll never forget. I mean, he had Anthony Perkins, and Fred Astaire was in it, Gregory Peck, and well, they've got this series on TV called World Without People, and that's sort of what it reminded me of, because they would visit these places, and there wasn't anybody there, and of course, they'd all died. And they were trying to find this radio signal, which was just a Coke bottle and type of windowsill thing that was hitting a telegraph key. And then when they have to go back, And, of course, my favorite, Ava Gardner, was in that thing. She was just wonderful in that movie. But nonetheless, that's all I have to contribute. It's just, you know, a little eye candy. Good movies. A lot better than some we see today, you know?
Yeah, I am curious about Monuments Men. That looks like an interesting...
I had a friend who was a Monuments Man.
Really?
Yeah. His name was Lieutenant, he was Lieutenant Colonel. His name was William Belfer. William and I worked together in his antique shop when I was in Columbia. He was also a graduate of the Citadel. And when he was in Germany, he was stationed in, or billeted in Eva Braun's house, the one in Munich, the one that had been given to her by Hitler.
Wow.
And the stuff he hauled out of there. William had, and he's gone now, he had so many things in his house. I mean, he had collected so many valuable things, he didn't trust anybody because he had been robbed. There was this psychiatrist in Columbia who basically was very upstanding and this, that, and the other. He was also a law professor. But he also was a thief. And he was in charge of the neighborhood watch. Well, let me tell you something. When the neighbors went home or went away, he watched. And he busted William's place and took a lot of stuff from him. And William never forgot that. And even when I would be invited to William's house for dinner, as well as we knew each other and our families knew each other, you went to the bathroom before you went over there because he would not let you come in there.
Wow.
I mean, that was William. God bless him. He was a great fellow and a good friend. And, you know, but that was just an understanding that people had. And he didn't invite that many people over. And I can remember going out, you know, going to his home. We had dinner on the patio and stuff like that. If you had to use the John, you went out behind a tree. If you did to do the other, you better sure as hell do it before you went. But that was just his rule. And that was the way it was. But he was a part of the Monuments Men and went into a lot of these places where the Nazis had hidden treasures stolen from the Jeux de Paume, for example, like Goering. I mean, Goering was worse than Hitler as far as that was concerned. Good Lord. But nonetheless, the stuff that they had to catalog and try to repatriate to the countries from which it was stolen, it was just absolutely incredible. And I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to share conversations with this particular gentleman. Because he certainly was a very wonderful person. And he had a lot of influence on me. He really was. He was a good friend. And I miss him dearly. But he was part of that detachment. Came out as the Lieutenant Colonel and then went into the antique business, and I remember people would have him over for dinner, and there was one lady who was particularly obnoxious who wanted to have her so-called mice in China evaluated, and William asked me, will you pick me up and take me over there, because I sure as hell don't want to go. I can't stand that woman. And so I'll pick you up. So we went over to her house or her apartment, and of course, what she wanted was a free evaluation. And William just looked up. He had this long Jovian beard by this time. And he said, Miss Mills, all this stuff is absolutely fake. It's not real.
Oh, my goodness.
So she got her money for it.
Say.
So, I mean, you know, you don't get me for nothing. That's all I had to say. And, you know, good luck with your imperial rice or whatever. And
forbidden rice.
Well, I call it imperial rice now. If it's forbidden, it's black. Wow.
And I don't think that Lotus Foods, I don't think they're the only ones. I've actually seen black rice in Kroger's. And it is I've not had the Lotus Foods brand, the forbidden rice, but I have had black rice in the past, and it does have a lovely flavor.
Very good. Well, you know, strange enough, Campbell's soup has a good thing. It's chicken soup with wild rice.
Oh, yeah, I lose my mind. And the difference between wild rice like you buy in the store, and the stuff that was that was given me that was harvested by hand and from, you know, from not farms, you know, from a more hunter-gatherer perspective. Oh, it's magnificent. It is just magnificent.
Well, indeed.
And there's to make a wild rice soup with, say, turkey broth, you know, to cook, you know, and pieces of dark and white meat turkey and your onions and celery and potatoes and carrots and whatnot, and wild rice is nothing short of just taste bud paradise.
Oh, I'm certain. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention last night, talking about chili, I always took a jar of those red peppers, sweet red pepper, and dump those into the chili mix.
Oh, that'd be good. That would be good.
That's it. Enough of the food porn.
Oh, yeah, here I am hungry again. Can't wait. Can't wait for my noodle bowl at the end of the evening.
Well, bon appetit.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Have a good evening.
Bye.
Yeah, a jar of those sweet red peppers would be tasty in a pot of chili. Frank notes Monuments Men was very good, so that might be one to keep an eye out for when it finally hits online viewing, Amazon Prime, Netflix, what have you. Let's see here. 17 minutes past the hour, and as noted, the first part of Robert's Down Under Up Over challenge has been met, leaving us $30 to go to make the evening's fundraising goal. Had a note from David, who writes, Bob, the program's making a difference. Not to get all melodramatic and all, but this town manager has obviously been influenced by the water disaster in West Virginia. Thanks so much for getting the issue front and center for some, at least. And this at least has a reasonably good ending, this story. Dateline is Westford, Massachusetts. Today, updated at 5:23 p.m. today. Fairly short piece. But a freight train... We're going to get more. There's going to be more of these stories, too, you get the sense. A freight train derailed on a trestle in Westford, Massachusetts, Thursday, today. It happened over Bridge Street in Westford, near North Main. Five cars were knocked off the tracks on the trestle. Gee, Bob. What kind of train cars? Well, two of them were tankers carrying liquefied petroleum gas. The city manager that David refers to, Westford Town Manager Jody Ross, said, we were not notified by Pan Am at all, who is apparently the rail company. My fire chief stumbled upon the derailment. We called our contacts at Pan Am, and there was no answer, so I walked down the tracks to find the general manager. Meanwhile, railroad executives, managers, whatnot, refused to talk to either the town manager, Jody Ross, or to reporters. Ross said we were dismayed, especially when he called the police to get me off the tracks. No, really, the railroad guy called the cops on the city manager who was trying to protect the citizens of Westford, Massachusetts. There will, I promise, be more of this. But thank you for the kind words, David. That means a lot. To know that there is value in trying to shine a light on this stuff. Because people have to get active. If they don't, we're toast, plain and simple. I had a note from Kate earlier asking me if I was going to mention this story, and yeah, I had it in the stack specifically for this evening. On the front end, it feels like a little bit of good news. A lawsuit was filed in Lancaster County, Nebraska, and found its way into the courtroom of Judge Stephanie Stacy. The lawsuit was a challenge to Nebraska Governor Dave Heineman's having given his approval for TransCanada to go ahead and get busy screwing up the water and the life of the middle part of this country via the Keystone XL pipeline. And Judge Stacy issued a ruling in which she said that the arguments proffered by people who oppose the godforsaken pipeline she said they were right, because in essence she held that a law passed by the legislature in Nebraska in 2012 let Governor Heineman give approval for the pipeline when there was no way to give him that authority. What he did was give TransCanada eminent domain power, which is sickening and shocking, so that a private corporation could come in and simply take people's land for pissant money to build their great big disaster snaking down the middle of this country. Judge Stacy said the only people who could make the decision to give TransCanada eminent domain powers was the Nebraska Public Service Commission, because they have jurisdiction over pipelines and other utilities. Governor Heineman wants to appeal her decision. Nebraska Attorney General John Bruning said Nebraska will appeal her ruling. TransCanada, through some spokes creep, said, "We are disappointed and we disagree with the decision." TransCanada continues to believe strongly in Keystone XL and the benefits it would provide to Americans. Thousands of jobs, lie, and a secure supply of crude oil from a trusted neighbor in Canada, lie, because it's all going to the refinery outside Houston, and then it's going to get on a boat and go to China, which is part of the reason the Panama Canal is being expanded. Disgusting. But yeah, for the moment, it's a win, because it delays these toxic marauders from being able to go through on their evil plans. The problem, however, is that it is not final. It is an appealable decision. And I want to be wrong, but I don't place any hope in whatever appeals courts exist in the state of Nebraska to uphold Judge Stacy's otherwise rational ruling. The suit was brought by three farmers who object to having their land stolen from them and probably ruined for forever. Well, not forever, but, you know, a few thousand years, which is essentially forever if you're the person whose land is ruined. The lead plaintiff in the case is Randy Thompson, a Nebraska rancher. He said of TransCanada, "They came out here like a bunch of bullies and tried to force it down our throats. They told us there was nothing we could do to stop it." meanwhile, representing Lee Terry from Nebraska Stan is a Republican, and he supports TransCanada being allowed to poison the middle of the country. He said he's confident the ruling will be overturned. And he said, and the ruling shouldn't stop Obama from approving the federal permit. I hope the ruling stands. But I don't have a lot of confidence that it will. But I sure am proud of the people who had the guts to stand up against the monsters. I truly, truly am. Darlene pointing something out, and it is pretty big news. Darlene says, I don't know if you saw this or mentioned it on the program, but I thought I'd pass it along. Apparently, the Obama administration has abandoned, again, hopefully for the last time, chained CPI. It's not due to be included in the annual Obama budget that he will present to Congress. Sadly, one cannot help but wonder if Obama still believes in it. Again with the entitlement reform. Jesus. What else? This. And a few other things, but this one kind of jumped all over me. I posted it over at headonradionetwork.com for your perusal. From Agence France-Presse, Dalai Lama in U.S. seeks humane capitalism. I read that headline and checked to see if the website address was actually The Onion. Because, see, there's no such thing as humane capitalism. That's like vegan shark. Agence France-Presse writes, praising China's shift toward a market economy, the Dalai Lama called Thursday for a humane form of capitalism in an unlikely encounter with U.S. free market advocates. The Dalai Lama is in the United States, and he met with, the American Enterprise Institute. A gang of right-wing free market predator supporters. And he said that, among other things, the Dalai Lama said that China had done the right thing by abandoning Soviet-style command economy. He said, I think Deng Xiaoping was a very realistic leader. He accepted the reality and had courage to change the economic system. But, okay. Then he said to the predators gathered at the American Enterprise Institute, we need a sense of concern toward other human beings on the basis of the sense of the oneness of humanity. He said, now after listening, I develop more respect about capitalism. Oh, dear. The president of the American Enterprise Institute is Arthur C. Brooks, who, being what he is, would probably shiv his own grandmother for a nickel. Speaking to the Dalai Lama, he said, if we can earn our success, if we have the dignity as individuals to do this, nothing can hold our world back, and there is no greater example of this set of ideas than His Holiness the Dalai Lama.
What?
By the way, I did see a report that President Not Sure will meet with the Dalai Lama, I think, tomorrow. But what in the hell is this? I mean, I guess we've put ourselves into that sort of binary world of it's either capitalism or some sort of Soviet-style command economy, and there's nothing in the middle. And but how in the world can there be a compassionate capitalism when the capitalism that is practiced today is predicated on the absence of anything resembling compassion? My God, one of their patron saints, Ayn Rand, finds the idea of compassion or mercy laughable and spent page after tedious, greedy page in Atlas Shrugged talking about why people who think compassion is due to other human beings are a bunch of simpering morons. Capitalism is predicated on consuming everything as rapidly as possible in exchange for designated value. And the rich get whatever they want, and the poor go F themselves. Now, how do you inject into that? And I'm not railing against the Dalai Lama. He's one of the few holy people for whom I have any real respect. Oh, dear. Let's see. Okay. One of the little devices is dinging. But no, I'm not gooning on the Dalai Lama, but at one point he said, if I spend 30 years studying economics, I'll have a better, unless I spend at least a few years to study about the world economy, he couldn't form more concrete opinions. I can't imagine how the Dalai Lama might study capitalism for a few years and come away thinking there's any hope that it will ever be compassionate, because it isn't. It is designed for consumption. Endless consumption. That's one of the essential failings of it, is it presumes that finite resources can be endlessly consumed. Infinitely consumed. Irish Dave asking, you think it's just coincidence that the first cloned sheep was named Dolly? Maybe Francis the Talking Pope shared the free market hymnal with him. But mercy sakes, capitalism is not going to lift the aching billions of this planet out of their agony. Oh, God. On the other hand, the Washington Post reported on this story and noted that they said that the Dalai Lama came to AEI and prodded him to offer a warm endorsement of capitalism, but the Dalai Lama demurred. The panel at American Enterprise Institute was, the topics were moral-free enterprise, vegan sharks, and human happiness. Well, free enterprise and capitalism say F human happiness, well, for most of the humans. They asked the Dalai Lama whether he agrees that the free enterprise system is the most moral of economic systems, and why he thinks the U.S. is the richest nation on earth. bless his heart, the Dalai Lama responded by saying, "What do you mean by rich?" And said, "United States, capitalist country, most richest, but gap rich and poor." And he said there need to be more discussions, more concern for others' well-being. There will be concern for the well-being of others in a capitalist system when pigs fly. Because you can't have capitalism and concern for other human beings. Because capitalism is predicated upon exploiting those human beings. The Dalai Lama told these sick freaks that we need a world of peace. He said, "We must create it. Peace only comes through our action, not through wishful thinking. Buddha cannot give you what you want. You must make effort." And this Arthur Brooks, president of AEI, this is a real knee slapper. He asked the Dalai Lama how nations could best protect private property and how the poor could enjoy, and this is a quote, "the blessings of the free enterprise system." Ha! That's the trick to capitalism. The poor don't get to enjoy the blessings of the free enterprise system. That's how the rich remain rich and the poor get poorer, which is how the system is designed to work. How can nations best protect private property? Well, really? The Dalai Lama is the guy you want to ask that of? The guy who is the head of a religion that says the whole goal of life is to end the repeated reborn cycles of suffering that are born out of the kind of desire and avarice that the AEI fosters? The point is to get snuffed out so that you're not part of the miserable cycle anymore. Yeah, but how are we going to protect private property, Your Holiness? At which point, if there had been any justice in the universe, the Dalai Lama would have smacked him in the back of the head so hard his teeth would have rattled and told the dumb little bastard to go and wash his rice bowls. Oh, I hope Arthur Brooks is reincarnated as a dung beetle or something. No, guinea worm. And then there was this goober named Jonathan Haidt, who is a professor of business and ethics at NYU. And he said that the Dalai Lama could write a more nuanced story of capitalism where all get to share in its bounty. Well, then it won't be capitalism. Marty pointing out, "Oh, and you thought the whole of the American Enterprise Institute didn't have a sense of humor." Yeah, that's downright slapstick. Let's go to the Skype line. Devin's with us. Hey, Devin.
Hey there.
What's happening?
you know, that's called socialism. No writing required.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
Now, earlier when you were talking about expanding the Panama Canal, there's a Chinese company that's going to build another canal across Nicaragua.
which, interestingly, was originally where they wanted to build the canal in the first place.
Right. Of course, they didn't do any, environmental impact statements or anything like that. They just, signed a contract. They didn't even have a route planned.
And it is being predicted that it may very well be an absolute disaster for the people who live, who have to live in that environment.
Yeah. Well, just like the construction of the Panama Canal was a disaster for the people who live there. I mean, all that work that they did caused, places for water delay, and then they got the mosquitoes. And
I had no idea that the largest source of fresh water in Central America is Lake Nicaragua. And guess what? It's going to go right across it. So, who needs to be able to water schmatter? I mean, can't we just sell it? Can't we just buy it from Nestle?
Oh, God. Nestle needs to be eradicated.
Yeah.
And then there's this thing... apparently, we've entered a positive feedback loop with the polar vortex and the Gulf Stream and the jet stream, and apparently, it's going to very much accelerate the melting of the ice, which will then accelerate the rest of the mass. The heating up of even our part of the country, so
yeah,
it's going to get really interesting. And we're talking like the end of this year.
Wow. And I guess things warmed up where you were today too, right? We got to 70 here. It reached 80 inside the studio here. And it's
wow.
We're in the 50s through the remainder of the week, and in the start of the week, I guess we start dropping down through the 40s, and more crap coming next week.
Yeah, that's the way I take it. But this, and then of course this will also combine with the La Nina. There's a massive La Nina building because all the extra heat that we haven't been getting, has been going straight into the Pacific. And that's going to be released also, like fourth quarter of this year. So it could get really interesting this 2015.
Yeah.
And the article that was talking about the positive feedback loop is, they weren't even accounting for La Nina.
Oh, really? That's not in there?
Yeah. That was separate from the La Nina.
Oh, that'll be a real blast.
Yeah. So, this summer could be, in the hundreds instead of in the 90s like it's been being for the past few years.
See, I'm never going to look towards, this has been a very, very long and very, very cold winter for, around these parts, as I'm sure you can attest. By the same token, I'm looking up at July summer is never going to be the same to me again after the derecho of 2 years ago. And I have a feeling we're going to experience more of those, that was not a one-off.
Oh, no. And then we're also going to start experiencing the droughts. Like, maybe next year. So... and not like our normal droughts, which, our normal droughts are still pretty wet.
Well, and
maybe dry enough. You know, that's one of fires.
Yeah, that's one of the things that sort of astonishes me or fills me with some sort of sardonic angst. I don't know. When I read the DEP saying things like, well, you know, we had this Blackwater spill in the Grapevine Branch because we had a lot of rain. And you just want to go down there and grab somebody by their lapels and shake the daylights out of them and go, asshole, you live in a temperate rainforest. Of course we had a lot of rain. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what they said there, you know, they may as well have just said, you know, Orwell took a piss. I mean, you know, that's would have meant about the same thing, you know.
Right.
I mean, they don't even speak the same language anymore. I mean, sure, they're using the same, you know, they're using words from the English language, but.
But they
really
get to apply
no meaning.
Right. They get to apply their own meaning to them. I mean, the DEP complaining about rain reminds me of that scene from Life of Brian where Brian screams, "Of course it brought forth juniper. Of course it brought forth juniper berries. It's their juniper bushes."
Yeah. And then with all this, the. There were some comments earlier about the, you know, everybody in the world being, you know, on edge or edgy or nervous. And I don't know if you ever read the book, The Fourth Turning, but if it's not on your list, it needs to be on top of it.
Okay.
It explains the historical cycles of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're shaping up for the crisis mode. And, you know, we're at the stage where you get, you know, total war. Like it was the same during the Civil War. And then after that, it came up onto the Depression and World War II.
Right, and see, that's part of why the business with the Dalai Lama going to the American Enterprise Institute drove me a little bit crazy, Devin. This guy is looking to capitalism to help create a century of peace. Capitalism's been running wars for profit for God knows how, you know, for as long as there's been capitalism. Please. I mean...
See, I don't know. Did they just ask him?
He's doing a national tour, and this was, yeah, I guess they, you know, you pay enough, he'll go. And
you figure, you know, he may have thought, what the hell, maybe I can, you know, go there and, you know, hit him with the axe handle, you know. There's a few things there that, you read off that he said, you know, kind of...
Right, I mean, he wasn't going to be their tool.
No.
But still, the idea... It's right up there with Jesus telling the rich man to sell everything he owns, give it to the poor, and follow him. I mean, can you see any of those hedge fund managers that were sitting there in that meeting... kicking off their shoes and sitting in the lotus position and considering the mystery of the universe? Because I can't.
Only if there's cocaine involved.
Right, yeah. The mystery of the Peruvian flake. Well, for pity's sake. And see, the idea of a century...
But it doesn't mean you don't try.
No, but the idea of a century of peace is offset by what you were just talking about, Devin, and that is the idea that this is the century of the resource wars. I mean, we were talking about Ukraine toward the end of the program last night, and how can you understand Ukraine in any way except to say, as Jim noted, that Russia wants them in their orbit because it's their breadbasket?
Yeah, well, it's not just a breadbasket. I mean, there's so much stuff that they have that is coveted. Is the best way that I can put it. By Putin, by the oligarchs.
Supposedly, maybe there will be an another uneasy truce. There was one in place that was broken last night that led, and I watched a lot of really, really horrifying video. There's video coming out of Kiev that shows people being snipered in the streets. You know, with live real lead bullet ammo.
Yeah.
And it's damn difficult to watch. There's Radio Svoboda has a live feed going 24/7 that's available over on YouTube. And it's just a static camera shot of Euromaidan, what they're calling the Independence Square. And I did do some further reading, and there are a lot of people who are just normal human beings who would like to have good government. But into that protest movement have been injected some ultra right wing nationalists, who naturally have an affinity for shooting guns, and some anarchists who just want to overturn everything, and it's making things even more difficult.
Yeah,
and watching.
It wouldn't matter if they all got out there and sung Kumbaya, you know, the result would be the same.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, our discussion of the Panama Canal work, Frank just shot me a note saying the Panama Canal work is on hold for the last 2 weeks, and I think this is the Panama Canal expansion. For the last 2 weeks, Frank says, the two main developers from Italy and Spain have been arguing over who's in control. And at this point, cost overruns are at $1.6 billion.
What is it, like a $1 trillion project?
Oh, it's huge, because they're widening the locks to accommodate supertankers. That's my understanding.
I thought they were just putting in a whole new set of locks.
Well, that might be. Because the locks were.
That's the only way they could do it.
The locks were already too small by the advent of the Second World War. When my father's aircraft carrier passed through, they had to take the anti-aircraft guns that were mounted I think it would be the port side, and they stuck out. In other words, they weren't flush inside the ship itself. They were overhangs. They had to be removed because otherwise the ship could not transit the locks.
Yeah. I mean, it's up until a few years ago, they were still using the original electric and hydraulic controls and the mechanical controls. And it was like a time capsule.
Yeah.
But, of course, you know, they had to get, Windows 8.1 for landfills and all that. But
yeah.
Because you can't have levers and buttons and things like that. That's passé.
It's so not done.
You know, it's like the power plants in this state. You know, they had perfectly good working controls and, they were analog. They didn't break. They worked forever. Now you have, just PCs with a whole bunch of screens, and, sometimes the screens quit working, and you just have to hope that things will, continue on the way they're supposed to.
And along those lines, Jim points out by email, Devin, he says, hell, they had the idea of using nuclear bombs for building a new canal in the 70s at sea level.
Yeah, well,
They
had ideas for using nuclear bombs for just about everything. drop a nuke in a hurricane to neutralize it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the tactical nuclear. It was basically like an RPG.
Which, oh God!
That's about the stupidest thing you could ever imagine.
Yeah. Well, we are up out of time, but I've enjoyed the conversation, and hope we'll have another one soon.
Alrighty.
All right. You take care, Devin. Bye now.
Night, Bob.
Devin calling from a different part of almost level, almost non-toxic West Virginia. Thanks going out to Michael. Michael has gotten us to within $10 of meeting the fundraising goal for this evening. And thanks to everybody who helped to meet Robert's Down Under Up Over 20th of the Month challenge. That's how we keep all of this going. Thank you to all of you. Thanks to all of you who give of your time and of your financial support to keep this going, who share the finite parts of your life in this conversation. It means a great deal to everyone involved. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Reminder, Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. If you have never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, it is a blast. So do, by all means, feel free to jump into the conversation if you wish. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. Go to Coal Tattoo and read the story about the new health impact report that is out. This is the critical work of the ACHE campaign in trying to raise awareness and get the ACHE Act passed before any more innocent people can be liquidated for the profit of the coal companies. ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn. Sensation.